This is the Washington Indivisible Podcast. I'm your host, Stephen Cox. Well, by now you have heard about the three GOP-backed initiatives on this November's ballot that are threatening to roll back important progress on things like the climate, healthcare, and equitable taxation here in the state. Our friends at Fuse Washington have been hard at work on messaging and strategy to help us defeat these measures. And here to talk about it are our friends Rosie Barber, she is campaign director with Fuse, and Rainey Cohen, director of the Fuse Communications Hub. Hello to you both. How are you?
Good.
Great. Good.
Okay, well, I know it's a busy time for you, so I appreciate you taking the time here today. So, let's talk first about how we want to brand these initiatives, because we know these GOP backers are calling their initiatives Let's Go Washington, which is kind of absurd on its face. So, Rosie, talk about how you would like people to refer to these initiatives, as well as a campaign to defeat them.
Yeah, thanks, Stefan. So as you mentioned, Brian Haywood's PAC is called Let's Go Washington, which is kind of a play on words of the MAGA slogan, Let's Go Brandon.
I hadn't put that together. Oh, they're so fun.
Yeah. But what we're trying to say is we're not going anywhere. We're going backwards if these initiatives pass. So we've been calling them backwards initiatives because that's exactly what they'll do. These initiatives aim to take Washington backwards by repealing huge progressive wins from recent years. Initiative 2109 would repeal the capital gains tax. Initiative 2117 would repeal the groundbreaking Climate Commitment Act. And Initiative 2124 would eliminate long-term care benefits for millions of working Washingtonians. So when we talk about the initiatives, we call them backwards initiatives because they aim to take us backwards and undo years of hard-fought progress. But the broader campaign is called Defend Washington. And that's kind of all about the fact that we all deserve to live in healthy communities, and these deceitful initiatives would harm our health, our schools, and our economy. And we know better than to fall for these lies. So we're coming together to defend Washington and urge people to vote no on these initiatives so that we can protect our communities, the ones that we love and we've built here in Washington.
Good, good, good. Okay, yeah, so Defend Washington is the campaign to defeat them. I like that very much. You mentioned Brian Haywood. What more should we know about who's behind these initiatives?
Yeah, so Brian Haywood and Jim Walsh are kind of the villainous dynamic duo behind these initiatives. Brian Haywood is a multimillionaire Republican mega donor. He's the main funder of these initiatives. He spent upwards of $6 million of his own money to get these initiatives on the ballot. And he's basically trying to buy himself and his wealthy friends a tax cut. And Jim Walsh is the other one in this dynamic duo. He is the far-right Republican MAGA state party chair, and he is the prime sponsor of all the backwards Washington initiatives. With a Democratic majority in the House and Senate here in Washington, these two are basically trying to game the system through the initiative process because Republicans can't win elections and they can't push their MAGA agenda through the legislature. They're using whatever means they have available to undo historic progress here in Washington.
So folks will note that initially there were six of these initiatives, and then during the most recent legislative session, the Democratic-led legislature decided to take up and pass three of these initiatives. They passed 2111, which bans an income tax, 2081 is the so-called Parents' Bill of Rights, and then 2113 rolls back rules prohibiting police high-speed chases. Rainey, let's bring you in here. What are your thoughts on the legislature's decision to pass these bills?
Yeah, I mean, I want to acknowledge at the outset, like, it's not an ideal situation for those of us who do work in the progressive movement. We did not want to see any of these initiatives pass. But ultimately, the legislature decided that these three kind of did the least amount of harm and are so poorly written and vague that passing them made a certain amount of sense. If you send something to the ballot and it gets passed by the voters, the legislature can't make any adjustments to it for two whole years. When the legislature passes these initiatives themselves, they can make adjustments to it at the very next legislative session. So I think 2081 is a really good example of where this concern came up. A lot of folks are concerned that this would roll back protection for LGBTQ students, privacy rights, access to gender-affirming care, those kinds of things. Ultimately, they took a look at it and decided that on its face, the initiative didn't do that, but it could be misinterpreted and misapplied in school districts. So when the legislature passed it, so that if those like unintended consequences happen, they can make fixes to it right away. And so leaving it in the legislature's control actually had a bunch of benefit. And then, kind of like for us here working on the movement side, removing three for us to fight at the ballot sets us up better to win because we can focus our energy on these three that we know we can defeat at the ballot. And we aren't quite as split across our movement in resources and energy as we're trying to fight against them.
Very smart. And, you know, in fact, you talk about the fact that the legislature would be able to make amendments if necessary. When we spoke with Senator Monkadingra, who is herself the parent of a trans child, and we spoke specifically about 2081, about, you know, potentially some of the harm that might come to LGBTQ students, she had mentioned that the legislature, and particularly Democrats, obviously, in the legislature, will be keeping a very close eye on that. So, you know, we'll talk about the remaining three bills that will appear on our initiatives, rather, that will appear on this November's ballot. But Rainey, you know, before we get into that, I just want to ask you overall, what do you think is the most effective approach that we can use generally for messaging to voters about these people who may be on the fence, people who may not know much about these initiatives? Do you feel like we talk about the potential harm these initiatives would cause? Do we appeal to people's values, both, neither, something else?
I mean, it's all of the above. When you're talking about the harms, you are actually appealing to people's values, right? If you think about repealing the capital gains tax and removing or eliminating $900 million from schools and childcare and just like student enrichments, that's a value that we all hold. And the damage that this initiative is going to cause is going to hurt us in our values. And so, you know, we want to package our messaging as always with like leading with that shared value, identifying who the villain is, in this case, Brian and Jim, and then our call to action, which is obviously vote no on all of these initiatives. So, as long as we are educating our voters about exactly what these initiatives will do, and the fiscal impact statement that will appear on the ballot will help articulate that. And then pair it with the fact that this is also that a wealthy man from California can get a tax break for himself and his rich friends. And so that Jim Walsh can advance the MAGA agenda in Washington because they can't do it legislatively.
Exceptionally well put. Articulate, just as you've done, our shared value, talk about the villains in the equation, and then give a call to action. Absolutely textbook. I love it. Rosie, you know, you have pointed out when I've heard you speak about this that these three initiative campaigns that remain actually have some interesting commonalities. Can you touch on that?
Yeah, for sure. So all three of these remaining initiatives are deep threats to Washington's future, and would have serious substantive impacts if they pass. So they all repeal really important policy wins from recent years, and they would all have really major fiscal impacts if passed. And Rainey touched on this a little bit, but because of the fiscal impact piece, we feel like we actually might have a good shot at defeating these remaining initiatives at the ballot. So when these initiatives show up on the ballot, their fiscal impact will appear on the ballot alongside them, talking about what the impact of passing them will be. So, for example, repealing the capital gains tax would take away $900 million a year from our kids in schools. Repealing the Climate Commitment Act would take away millions of dollars for clean air and water here in Washington. And repealing long-term care benefits would take away $8 billion for working people who need long-term care, you know, whether that be for a pregnancy or a medical emergency, like an injury or illness. So we're hoping voters see these fiscal impacts on their ballots and realize MAGA Republicans don't actually have their best interests in mind.
Absolutely right. And as you point out in the past, they're deliberately deceptive and misleading. You just point out that they are going to cut billions in funding for critical, you know, services, things that we prioritize here in the state. And they're out of step with our values, as Rainey pointed out. So let's do talk about these three measures. I do want to start with 2117. This is the one that would repeal the Climate Commitment Act. This would end the Cap and Invest program. We've talked about this. This raised $1.8 billion last year for the state. Rosie, first, just refresh folks on how Cap and Invest works for us here.
Yeah, so the Climate Commitment Act was one of Washington's landmark climate legislation, and it created a market-based cap and invest program designed to reduce greenhouse gas pollution. So the cap and invest program works in two ways. So the first is that the largest polluters in Washington are required to purchase allowances. So the more that they pollute, the more that they have to pay. And over time, fewer pollution allowances are available for purchase. So that's the cap part of the cap and invest. So that makes it harder, or so it makes polluters have to find ways to operate more cleanly. And then the second piece of it is that the state reinvests those payments from polluters back into communities. So the money from the Cap and Invest program helps more Washingtonians switch to climate-friendly options for, you know, their homes, schools, businesses, vehicles. And yeah, that's kind of a breakdown of how it works. And we're really concerned about what's going to happen next with the Climate Commitment Act here in Washington, because Washington has really shaped the landscape for climate action nationwide. Washington is really seen as the national leader on both policies and politics of climate. So repealing the Climate Commitment Act would not only take away substantial funding in Washington for clean air and healthy communities, but would also have ripple effects across the country and kind of dampen the political will to enact really bold climate policies in other states.
Yeah, it's my understanding that other states are really watching to see if we can stand up to this repeal here in Washington, California, New York, Michigan, others. So I'm going to ask for each of these, what is a good one-line takeaway on why we need to defeat, in this instance, 2117?
Yeah. So if Initiative 2117 passes, it would obviously end the program to make polluters pay for the harm that they cause, but would also undo protections for our air, water, forests, and farmlands. And it would threaten the safety of our drinking water and allow more toxic air pollution, and would really result in more kids and adults with asthma and illness in Washington. So really urging folks to vote no on this one.
Great. Okay. Next, let's discuss 2124. Rainey, this would repeal long-term care benefits for Washingtonians under the Washington Cares program. Talk first about what Washington Cares covers.
So first, it's important to know that WaCares is not a household name. And so whenever we're talking about it, we want to identify that WaCares is Washington's long-term care benefit. And before WaCares, if you needed coverage for in-home care, residential care, home safety equipment, things like that, you needed to purchase very expensive private insurance. So with WaCares, the state will cover these kinds of expenses up to a little over $36,000. And it adjusts for inflation. So over 20 years or so, that benefit will increase to about $60,000. And all kinds of people qualify for this. So seniors who need assistance to stay in their homes for longer, or people who have had major surgery or experience a sudden disability. It also covers folks who have pre-existing conditions. And that is huge because private insurance denies people coverage.
That's right.
All the time. Yeah. 70% of us are going to need some kind of long-term care at some point in our lives. And so really everyone in Washington benefits from this program.
So really just a staggering number of people could be affected by this rollback. And Rosie touched on this already, but what would a rollback cost us financially here?
Yeah, it's $8 billion worth of guaranteed benefits for working people in Washington. 3.5 million working people in Washington as it currently stands. But honestly, for me, it's less about the dollar amount and more about the quality of life and care that we are losing. Caregiving impacts everyone in our families. And for instance, like if my mom needs to have a once a week at home nurse stop by and she can't afford to pay for it, guess who's stepping in? That's me. And with WaCares, at least that first $36,000 is going to be covered by the state, and that allows the rest of our family to plan for an event like that, and you know, just get us further down the line.
Really making this a quality of life issue. Absolutely. And I think that's something that we want to drive home here. But I'll just ask you to sum up. What's a good liner, a one-liner for this as to why we need to defeat this measure?
Yeah. If this initiative passes, it will bankrupt our long-term care system, and that will leave millions of people at the mercy of big for-profit insurance companies that are routinely denying coverage and increasing premiums on folks.
That's absolutely perfectly put, because as we know, insurance for profit does not have our best interest at heart, despite what their commercials would have you believe. So then finally, let's talk about 2109. This would repeal the capital gains tax. So Rainey, first and foremost, what is a capital gains tax? Just as a refresher, we've talked about this ad infinitum on this show, but just refresh us. What is a capital gains tax?
You know, my favorite topic to come talk about on the podcast, capital gains. So the capital gains tax is a 7% tax on stock market profits above $250,000 in a year. And this tax is truly narrowly focused. It exempts all kinds of things like home sales and retirement accounts and more, a bunch more. The funds raised from it go directly to public education, childcare, early learning, and notably school construction for all of our aging infrastructure we have around the state. And last year, the first year we collected this tax, it raised $900
million. $900 million. Given that the threshold you mentioned is so high, how many people in the state are currently subject to our capital gains tax?
Last year, about 3,300 people in Washington paid this tax. So truly, like, the wealthiest of the wealthy are the ones who paid this tax.
That is a surprisingly small number. And
this and a is lot of money to come from such a small number of people.
So should it be repealed? You touched on this a little bit already, but elaborate. Who would be impacted? What's the cost?
I mean, honestly, our kids will suffer the most, right? This yanks money away from the programs that are meant to enrich children as they grow and become adults in Washington. So everything from preschool, childcare, K-12, public education, but also the parents who are relying on that access to childcare so that they can go to work and know that their kids are in a safe place and experiencing life in enriching ways. It truly will have ripple effects throughout Washington.
And as you mentioned, almost $1 billion per year from funding from all the things that you just mentioned.
Yeah, the fiscal note on it is that it is $5.3 billion over 5 years that will be lost.
Okay, well, we've got a lot of data points here. So when talking, as we mentioned earlier, to somebody who might be a low information voter, somebody who's just on the fence, undecided, what's a good one-liner here?
That this initiative will take away more than $5 billion from kids and schools, all so that the ultra wealthy can have a tax break.
Perfect. So let's sum up then. Rosie, I'll give you just a moment for some final thoughts on these initiatives.
I'll just add, and hopefully we can put these in the show notes. We have a coalition sign on. So if there's organizations out there that want to sign on to the Defend Washington Coalition, and then Fuse also has a volunteer sign up link if people want to get involved and help defeat these slate of initiatives.
We will indeed have those in the show notes. Rainey, final word goes to you.
Yeah, I think, we're in a good position, but we need everybody to come together and spread the word to vote no on all of these. And as Rosie mentioned, there's multiple ways to do that. The Defend Washington campaign will be kind of what we're calling the Slate campaign, working to oppose all three. And then you will see no campaigns individually for each of the initiatives. So plug in wherever it makes sense. We really need everybody on this one.
Well, as I said at the top, I know you're both very, very busy right now, so we really appreciate you taking the time. Rosie Barber, Rainey Cohen, thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that'll do it for this week. The executive producer of the show is Kat Pipkin. If you would like to see a video version of this podcast, head to facebook.com/indivisiblepodcast. The email address for the show is indivisiblepodcast@gmail.com. Special thanks to Lori Colwell, and as always, my thanks to you for listening. I'm Stephen Cox, and we'll talk to you next time. Bye.